So here we are again.
So what are we going to call this thing? I mean, you came up with the name last time.
I come up with the name for everything. I came up with the Loose Cannon Comics name, too.
Was that you?
Yes.
Of course it was you.
Then I realized I could get paid for that skill. And you're not getting a walk this time.
Yeah, but now that you get paid for it, is it any fun anymore?
No.
I know how that is.
Other than bragging rights, no.
What'd you call it? An appellomancer?
An appellomancer.
Appellomancer, okay.
I was just going to call it the Xana Dudes.
Shut up.
No, we're not doing
no?
that. No? Bo, come on. You give us the name. What are we going to call this thing?
The Random Fucks.
Still better than the Xana Dudes.
If you say random Xana Dudes, I will kill you.
Random Xana Dudes?
Damn it.
Well, by the way, I already started recording.
Oh, dude, come on. Right. You're supposed to count us in.
Hey, pro.
All right, hey, and welcome to what we have decided while the music played. The show is The Original Gentleman.
Okay, so we're going with the name that we had before.
Yep.
It's much like we came up with The League of Extremely Ordinary Gentlemen.
I expended all those calories trying to think of something original.
I know, it's funny. We're sitting here like all banging our heads against the wall. But what are we going to call it? And then finally it's brought up. You know, we never actually did a show on that other site called The Original.
That's right.
So
is everybody good with Poochie?
Although I still think Xanadu would have been awesome.
Shut up. Don't ever mention that again.
All right. So this is indeed the first episode of The Original Gentleman featuring myself, Christopher Lawrence Cox.
Well, and Bo Paul.
And Martin Thomas, Christopher Lawrence.
Oh, my God.
Lawrence?
Yes.
I got to use my real name. That's so weird.
Like, I feel like Arlie Ermia. Lawrence, that's a queer name.
Well, I have to throw it in there because there's like 18 Chris Coxes in entertainment already.
And it's funny because...
You mean you don't do voice acting for Family Guy?
No.
That's right.
I'm not an electronica musician in England. I'm not a Republican senator, ex-senator who's a spokesman for the NRA.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know that one's the most surprising.
I'm shocked. Yeah,
there's
got to
be Chris Cox.
You'd think so. Although I have a friend whose name is Eric Kuntz, and you and him should be detectives.
Kuntz and Cox. Well, you know, I told you before, I dated a girl whose last name was Bush, and people were like, Bush and Cox? And then I dated a girl whose last name was Dixon.
You need to meet my uncle, Tits McGee.
I used to live on a street called Cockburn. My friend would go, are you Chris Cox of the Cockburn Coxes?
Wow.
But this new show here is indeed like, it's like a devolution.
It's not just about Cox.
Of our old show on that other site, where we're going back to the way it all started.
That's right.
Myself, Martin, and Bo just having fun, talking about shit. And you're going to see a lot of, or hear, I guess, not see, unless you're... have some sort of something internetomancy going on.
And in 3 years, we'll have 10 people in the cast again.
That's not going to happen. But you are going to see appearances by people that you know and love, except in a very different format. More of a sort of like, hey, and now our special correspondent sort of way. Because basically the three of us are the core of this group, and it is going to largely stay that way. Occasionally, we might have one guest on here. Occasionally, we might have interview people on here. But altogether, I feel like it's going to be a new show with a new feel to it. And yet some of the same stuff you guys have loved from us in the past from that other stuff.
We know what you guys love. And we're going to bring you that.
In 15 years, we will actually be holograms. And we will come and sit in your living room and bullshit about this
stuff. You're going to need that crystal from Superman. But yeah, this should be a lot of fun. I look forward to seeing what we're going to do with this thing. You know, it's going to be an evolving process, quite frankly, with a lot of stuff that's going to change over time, as these things do. See what you like, what you don't like. Really happy that this is on oneofus.net. So let's just go right into it and talk about, well, what's been going on. And it's funny, like, a lot of people hear me already on the internet with stuff about, like, what's going on every week, because... Well, what the hell else do I have to talk about? But Bo cracked me up when he came in here tonight, and we're like, what were you doing? And he's like, oh, I was just playing Keep on the Borderlands. Wait, what?
Wait, is that a Bruce Springsteen song?
It'd make a great one. It's right up there with The River. The Keep on the Borderlands is one of like the first modules ever made by TSR for Dungeons and Dragons. Not the fancy schmancy Dungeons and Dragons, mind you. This is the basic stuff, stuff that was actually marketed towards like 11-year-olds.
I think it's important. An important element is left out of this story is that you were playing this D&D game at a golf course.
Well, not a golf course, but a golf range. Yeah, my company does fun days like every, you know, 2 months or so.
Let's take a bunch of geeks out to play golf. And
I don't know where they. Generally, they're
it's like dinner for schmucks.
Like, we've been really good. This like generally, they're like, hey, we're taking to see the Avengers. Hey, we're taking to see Star Trek. And like, I don't
Who
know.
Who wants to hit some golf balls?
Yeah. Hey, we're going to the golf. And I think it was done, you know, merely by the fact that they're literally down the street from where we are.
Okay.
And so I guess they're like, well, we'll rent a room there. And people can do shit, you know. There's you know, big kind of banquet room with tables, and you know, it's a gaming company, so everybody there is, you know, is, you know, plays Magic or, you know, any of the 500,000 games,
yeah,
that are out there. Tabletop,
running from the sun, going,
yeah, exactly. And yeah, because and I was just like, well, I'm not gonna play golf, and I was actually thinking about like maybe taking paid time off and just leaving early. But my writing partner Sam was like, well, I was thinking of running some basic D&D and doing a, you know, kind of jumping in there and doing Keep on the Borderlands. Do you want? Are you interested in that? I was like, fuck yeah, I'm interested. I haven't played that in like 25 years.
And for those who don't know precisely what we're talking about here, imagine the scene in Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, where they go into what's the dwarf kingdom underground?
Oh my god, I cannot believe
speak
it. Moria.
Moria, the mines of Moria.
Speak friend
and remember that scene where there's like a billion fucking goblins everywhere that come out of everywhere? Imagine that same place, only there's like three goblins.
Exactly.
Oh, what?
Yeah, because you're basically one of the children in the Hobbit.
Well, you're
for all extents and purposes.
You're first level. And like, you know, that means like if you're a magic user or a cleric, you get one spell and you can do one per day.
You better
That's it.
Hold on to that magic missile.
Exactly.
And make sure that when you use it, your aim is good.
Yeah. Oh my god, you guys have just I never really thought about it. You just reminded me of why I never got into D&D.
Yeah.
Because I played as a magic user, and I got that one spell.
And you're like, this
one day.
Sucks.
Yes.
It is a light, you know, when you get up to 35th level and you've got, oh, I got a whole spell book now and I can do all kinds of shit. No, it's very much like, you know, it's like playing World of Warcraft. When you start out as a noob, you're like, oh, wow, I've got, you know, this shitty sword and rusted chainmail. Great.
I've got to mine rocks for fucking, like, some made-up element for 12 hours to do anything.
Although, you have to laugh at the people who start out that way, wanting to be warriors, and then they just go like, you know what? I'm just going to be a geologist in this game.
But it was
I mine rocks so much,
yeah,
I found
my
really good
passion.
At it. Yeah.
Well, somebody did do that for 12 hours, and then they're like, you know, I bet I could make a whole game of this. And it did. And they called it Minecraft, and he made a lot of fucking money.
That's true. That's a valid point. Somebody went, wow, there's a whole other thing here.
People are willing to do this.
You know, the thing is about D&D and the way it evolved and kind of got better was that they made it where there are always going to be those people who want to do that. This is my character. I built him up. All this stuff. But every time I go to play, it's always like a DM is like, look, I've got all these pre-made characters. There's little personality stuff on them, but you can mutate them as you want. They're like, this guy's 12th level, this guy's 10th level. Here's a list of spells. I'm like,
cool.
Yeah.
and these were quick and dirty characters. I mean, the GM, you know, pre-rolled them up and they, you know, but they're level one basic D&D characters. And so it's like, oh, wow, I haven't had to do this kind of strategy in a while. And you know, I lucked out because I got there late and I was like, oh, who's left? They're like, you got a fighter. And in basic D&D, you don't even get to pick your race. It's like, if you pick a race, that's your class. It's like, I'm the elf.
So wait,
are you an elf like ranger? It's like, no, I'm a fucking elf. That's
so you were playing literally the basic first edition.
Yeah, like, you know, you can be a dwarf, you can be an elf, you can be a fighter, you can be a magic user, you can be a cleric. Or a halfling. That's it.
Oh, I thought you said a dwarf.
Yeah, well, they were at a golf course.
Fun golf. Not that kind of dwarf. What is your name? What is your character's name? Conway.
I know. I win.
you do. I mean, there's only three people in the world who got that joke.
But
it was really good.
We want to lose the audience right off the bat.
Dwarf, what the fuck is he talking about? Look it up. Tim Conway used to have a really terrible video series with that character
called Dwarf on Golf. But Yeah, so I ended up getting the fighter, which is actually, if you're playing at a basic level, that's one of the best things to play, because you actually have pretty good stats.
And you get to do shit.
Yeah, and you're just like, oh yeah, okay, well, what are you going with? You know, what are you going to do this round? Well, I'm going to walk up to that goblin and try to fucking kill him. And so I basically murdered my way through the caves of chaos for like 4 hours today.
It was awesome. That beats the hell out of golf.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah. I actually went there as well to that place. And I did. I haven't swung a golf club. I've never swung like real golf, like for distance, ever. First time I ever did it. I played mini golf. You know, I was like, sure, where's the windmill? But yeah, the way they have it set up is like they have all these like electric, because the ball is
electronic. It looks very impressive.
To your signature, like, so it knows it's your ball. And there are all these little like places where it can roll into, like huge pits of different colors from different distances. And you get points based on where you hit it.
And still no windmills?
Still no windmills. But it's all like, you know, I mean, like for distance, it's all like, you know, a full set of golf clubs, and you swing back and go, wah! You know, you Happy Gilmore that shit as best as you can. And I, you know, I had fun after I stopped, like, looking like an idiot. but even so, it's nothing I would go back to.
To be fair, the learning curve on golf involves a lot of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of cursing involved in the learning curve as well.
God damn it.
Well, I imagine that's why it's so expensive, because you break so many of the clubs.
Seriously, just over your knee.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I've never understood, like, you know, skiing or golf or anything like that, where you literally have to invest hundreds and hundreds of dollars before you've even done anything. It's like, all right, I've outlaid $1,000 for, you know, the suit and these skis and the ski pole and my mask and
for this
the goggles.
Sport I really suck
now
at.
I'm gonna go up on the bunny slope. Well, yay.
Now, to be fair, geeks have their thing like that too. It's called Warhammer.
Well, true. Wait, I've got to paint this shit? Yep, you sure do. Yeah.
And those are going to cost you a lot of money.
Yeah. Why can't I just buy them pre-made? Oh, that's not the game.
At this point, I'm surprised they haven't found some rare element to make them out of that only you can use a specialized kind of paint that only they sell. You know,
this is
my
unobtainium mecca.
Indeed. Well, you know what? Let's move on to what we're drinking.
No,
this will be a regular part of the show, because we're always drinking when we record this.
That's
man,
true.
I thought the one positive about not doing the other show is like, oh, I can stop being an alcoholic now and grow my liver back.
You really thought that was going to happen?
Well, I was trying.
Look, I'm not talking to you fucking people sober.
Seriously, come on. We're prepping for the festival we got to be at next
weekend. That's true. That's true. That's true.
You know, if you guys were a bunch of beautiful girls, one thing.
Yeah, you don't want to go into the .com. Like, with a low tolerance level.
No.
Do you? So,
no. True.
Fill your glass.
And okay, yeah, so you can listen to this now, because, you know, we'll probably sound exactly like this if you talk to us at school.com.
Well, my first beer of the night was Devil's Backbone from Rio Ale, which is an excellent Belgian-style ale, a triple. And the best thing about it, I mean, it's delicious. It's got those Belgian sugars in it. It's really ridiculously strong. And it's pretty normal six-pack price. It's not like that. Like, usually you get a six-pack like that, it's going to be like $12.
Yeah.
It's like $9.99.
Yeah, if that.
$5.99, did you say?
$9.99. No, $9.99. Wow, you lit right up.
I found this at H-E-B for like $8.50. I was like, oh, $8.50? Shit, that's a good price.
$5.99. Yeah, no, well, shit, Negro, that's all you got to say.
I start with that, and I moved on to my cheaper backbone beer lately, which is Shock Top, which is their Belgian white. It goes down smooth. It's simple. It's a Blue Moon with orange flavor pre-added, basically.
Who makes those, do you know?
Coors, I think.
Well, that's the thing. Like, once you drink a really good, especially strong beer, first off, it doesn't matter what you drink after that.
Yeah, you got your start.
Yeah.
Well, and all the major breweries are trying to, you know, make their, like, little, you know, Trojan horse craft beers like this and Blue Moon. And, you know, Blue Moon's actually fairly decent, but most of them are, they're still cutting corners because it's still a huge corporation. So they don't have the, you know, loving craftsmanship of a really good beer.
Now, I believe Martin here chose to go with the whiskey.
I did. I mean, you know, that's often my drink now.
Yeah.
Because the beer is a little filling. I don't always like that afterwards.
Yeah, I know. You're more of a liquor guy these days.
I am. And there's nothing I love more than a glass of Glenmorangie on ice with just a tiny bit of water to wake it up.
It's actually, as I learned many years ago, it's Glenmorangie.
Morangy?
Yes. It okay. rhymes with orangey.
Okay.
Much like Shock Top. We're almost all drinking the same thing.
Well, I've always thought that Glenn Morangy doesn't sound right, but who cares?
No, I was stunned, Morangy. Too. But,
I always heard
yeah,
Glenn Morange.
We used to work in a bar that specialized in scotch, yeah. and yeah, one,
you
one
would
of
think
the,
I
their,
would remember
one of their reps was there. He's like, oh, no, mate, it's Glenn Morangy. I was like, oh, all right. Hey. Well, it's your fucking country, and you invented the stuff.
Meanwhile,
so.
His Scottish friend next to him was like,
I know, exactly.
I know.
Why'd you do that? I don't know. I just love it.
No, you want to drink that upside down, holding your nose.
They make you pronounce it with a word that's actually Gaelic for douchebag.
a nice glass of Glenn douchebag. That's funny, because I know a lot of douchebags named Glenn's.
Gaelic for my mother's pussy juices.
I always find like the higher douchebag ratio comes from guys named Colin.
Yeah, that's good. Brad, that's a good one.
Oh, Brad.
Oh man, jeez.
Now we're making the fans.
Now we know. I know
Brad.
A lot of cool Brads.
Yes,
I know some cool Brads too.
Just more douchebag ones.
You're fighting against the majority.
Well, you know what? To be fair, it's an instinct that's long since been ingrained in me since my days at Rocky Horror Picture Show, when every time right. they said Brad, you were supposed to yell, asshole.
Asshole. So, asshole.
And to this day, every time I meet a Janet, I'm like, what's up, baby?
Well,
oh,
I've
yeah,
been drinking,
like that Janet Reno.
Hey, man. Yo, you know hey, she puts out.
Hey. So I am actually drinking the Shock Top, but my... my summer beer of choice, since I had it on tap a couple months ago, has been the Deschutes Brewery Chainbreaker, which is a really cool mix. It's a wheat beer, but it's an IPA, and so it's like kind of the best of both worlds. It's got the bitterness and hoppiness of an IPA, but it's also got that real light, crisp feel you get from a really good wheat beer.
Oh man, so, I like everything you just said.
Yeah, it is. It's a bad thing because they got it. One of the few places that they have it on tap is literally down the street from me.
So, you can stumble yeah, to and from.
I walk in there and they just start pouring.
You
it.
Just try not to cut your gums on the taps this time. but you reminded me, like, it's summer is when Shiner usually has that smoky barbecue beer.
Oh, see, I don't like that one.
I will really get into that one, just drink it all the time, even though, yeah, it's like they took a six-pack and opened it and just put it on a barbecue grill. Yeah. Yeah, just like liquid smoke.
I haven't tried that, but I like smoky flavors in beers, like Rauch beers. But I'll tell you, my favorite Shiner summer beer, and thankfully they've been bringing it back, is the Ruby Red.
Oh, yes.
Which is,
tastes like grapefruit.
Ruby Redbird, yeah.
Oh, yeah, love it.
I know if you've never had it, you go, I don't want a grapefruit-tasting beer, but... They made it work.
It's it's got grapefruit and ginger in it, and yeah. it's it sounds kind of like an odd mix, but man, it works.
Goes
and it's
down
a great, great
much like
beer.
Janet Reno.
No, sorry, former Attorney General.
Man, that bitch can put out. All right, you know what? Let's move on to what are we into right now? I mean, I know Martin, you were talking a lot about some stuff that I knew nothing about.
Oh, so I'll get to talk about it alone then.
Yeah.
Well,
this will be fun.
This will be
fun. Yeah, because I'll never chime in about stuff I don't know shit about.
Well, one thing
I'm gonna go smoke.
One thing I was telling you, I was into, and this is just recent. Now I've been into for a while. If you guys know Mark Waid, one of the greatest writers of comic books,
yeah, absolutely,
who's ever existed,
yeah.
manages to still put out work just as great as his greatest works. Writer of Kingdom Come, Superman, Birthright. Sorry. He managing editor of Boom for a while, left that to do his own thing, webcomic called Insufferable. Now, you go to thrillbent.com, and he's been doing his comic Insufferable. That was about a character called the Nocturnus and his son Galahad. And you have to imagine Batman and Dick Grayson, you know, Nightwing. If Nightwing was his son but grew up resenting his dad and became kind of a media whore douchebag.
So
who goes on Twitter and like Facebook constantly.
Two or three of
so
the
like
other
Damian
Robins.
Yeah, yeah.
So like Damian would have grown up.
Yes, yeah, yes. Kind of like how Damian would have grown up. Not so much of an asshole but more of a douche. He was just more into marketing and being and how many Twitter followers
well,
he has.
Well, literally the idea here is that though they have to, the idea here is that they have to start working together again.
They do. One of their villains is bringing all the villains back and forcing them to work together, and they don't get along at all. And it's a great run. this first chapter. And it ended, and I was like, man, that was really good. And now I guess they'll sell it as a collection, which they have, especially you can get it on Comixology.
Yeah.
Or you can just go to their site and read it for free. And I was like, that was awesome. You know, I just on a whim went to go back to the site just so I could like grab the link and send it to some friends who I thought haven't read it, to discover that, oh, chapter 2 has started, and they were well into it. So I've been reading that and discovered they have a plethora of other webcomics on there. And while they're, you know, the others I'm checking out, the one I'm really into is The Damnation of Charlie Wood. Charlie Wormwood.
That's such a great name.
It is. It is. And this is a story about, no, there's no superheroics, at least not so far. It's just about a guy who's a literature teacher at a prison. His wife is pregnant, and he's pretty down and out. He's got a crooked warden that he works for. They're cutting his hours, which means cutting his medical benefits. And he's just trying to teach these prisoners high literature. And one says, like, hey, prof, come here, let me talk to you. You got a photographic memory, don't you? Yeah, you do. Listen, I got some things going on the outside, and I could use a guy like you. He's like, no, fuck off. I'm not a criminal. You're not going to do anything criminal. I just want you to go meet.
this would be a bad idea, and I'm not going to take part in it.
Yes. But he's like, look, I'm going to give you a message, because I can't trust the guys I got. I'm going to give you a message. You go see this guy. You tell him exactly what I said, and that's it. Just, I know I can trust you to tell him exactly what I said. Okay. And he does. And the guys fuck with him, and he comes back, and there's not a whole lot more plot-wise is happening. But there's so much great dialogue and interplay back and forth, and this feeling of dread that's coming up. But, like, you know, the guy's wife is about to deliver, and they're not even getting along. He's got a woman at the job who's flirting with him. It's a lot of things that are building, and it's still early. Like, if you were to get into it, you're getting on the ground floor. But it's, I don't know, I don't even know, if, I don't think Mark Waid's writing. I don't know who is.
Huh.
But it's
Christina Blanche and Chris Carr.
Okay. Huh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, they're doing a great job. Because there's a point where he's teaching the Count of Monte Cristo to these guys. And they're, you know, they're actually kind of getting into it. It's like, yeah, man, I'm all about revenge. Because this one guy, he dropped a dime on me. And then I got out, and the first thing I did, I went over to his house, and I fucked him in the ass. And he's like, what?
Oh, God!
And he's like, yeah, because yeah. Now he has to live forever knowing he had gay sex. And Charlie Wormwood was like,
okay. Okay. I mean, the funniest thing you do at that point is like, you know that guy was gay. Right?
So you just had, you know, sex with him.
Just saying.
But yeah, no.
Well, I thought you were saying like he was teaching the Count of Monte Cristo. I was like, wait, when does this take place? It's
like, well, he's teaching, you know, it's a literature class.
Like, was teaching the Count. It's like,
no,
yeah,
oh, come on. No. No, no, yeah.
Hey, I told you they were in a prison. That prison just happens to be the Chateau d'If.
Now for my special guest, the man in the iron mask. Come on in. Come
yes,
on
in. Is that the prisoner of Zender?
Well, that sounds really cool. And this stuff is all for free?
Yes. That's the thing. You can go on and just read it, and they're up to like chapter 13, issue 13, and they're short, but they're not quite motion comics. At the same time, you'll click on a panel, and sometime it'll just have like a bit of a not quite animation, but just, I don't know, transition.
Right.
But they've been great stories so far.
Well, it looks like there's actually a lot of stuff.
There's a lot.
On here.
That's the thing that impressed me. It's like it used to just be insufferable, and now there's a bunch on there.
Oh, the comic. I thought you meant the site. Okay, sorry. No, this is cool. I'm going to check this out. I didn't know about this at all. Now, another thing you were talking about was another thing I haven't seen.
Yeah.
But everybody else apparently has, which is Mark Maron going, Louis C.K., whatever. I can do that.
Kind of. You know, at the time, you know, Mark Maron, the king of podcasts, or one of the kings. I mean, I'm sure Adam Carolla would have a, you know, a conniption if he heard me say that. But Mark Maron.
Which would be good.
Yeah. Mark Maron's been doing his WTF show where he gets comedians on there.
Well, he started out just doing comedians, but now, like,
yeah, he gets everybody.
He gets, you know, musicians and movie stars and TV stars. And, you know, like, he did one of the best interviews with Bryan Cranston I've ever heard.
Oh, yeah, you know, yeah.
Bryan Cranston is not a stand-up comedian by any stretch of the imagination.
Yes. But he can be very funny.
He's very funny.
Yeah, you're right. He gets all types of people on there.
Yeah.
And it's been picking up in popularity.
Jay Mathis on for one of them. Yeah, and it was a really good interview.
Yeah, And he's, you know, saying like, yeah, I'm doing this show on IFC. It's about me. It's about my life. I'm a miserable, angry guy. I used to be a drug addict. And I'm just doing a podcast from my garage. And it's like, and that's pretty much how he does.
That's
like,
his life.
Like, I gave it more of a sell than he does. But I was like, well, I might as well check it out. I have the IFC channel. And I'm thinking like, it probably at best, it'll be a poor ripoff of Louis. It's actually really funny.
There, I saw one of the clips the other day, which is great. It's like, and I think he's on like some kind of film set, and he's talking to one of the guys, and he's eating like something off of craft services. He's like, yeah, this has a lot of carbs in it, but you know, tomorrow's my cheat day.
Yeah.
And if I make today my cheat day, and tomorrow just, you know, I'll eat a lot of lentils and legumes and kale. I think I should be okay. And the guy next to him is like, you know, this 20-something actor. He's like, I have no idea what any of that stuff you're talking about is. And he just looks at him and goes, oh, you will.
Well, that's his thing. Yeah. Mark Maron, in an interview, he talked about how I heard him on Howard Stern talking about it, how he admits like, wow, I was a really angry asshole for many years.
Oh, yeah.
And I've watched so many guys I started with surpass me. And he's like, and I was a huge asshole to Jon Stewart, who was never anything but nice to me.
Yeah, and Stewart actually is one of the few people, because Maron asked him, like, hey, will you come do a what the fuck? And Stewart was like, I don't know if you remember this, but you were a raging prick to me. Yeah. And I couldn't think of anything I'd like to do less.
Actually, I heard about a recent Nerdist, and they always do the thing before that where Chris Hardwick talks just by himself in his hotel room about the episode that he's already recorded. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, like, I had him on the show a couple times before in the past, and I was really sure that guy hated me. Like, he was really mean.
Well, it's funny because a lot of the like, you know, if you listen to the What the Fuck podcast on a regular basis, like, a lot of the first part of the interviews tends to be like, are we cool? And a lot of times the answer is like, well, I think so, but I always thought that you didn't like me. I was really surprised you asked me to be on this show. And he's like, oh, no, I always thought you were really talented. And he's like, yeah, well, there was this one time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's the thing.
And especially, when Maron was coming up the pike and kind of, you know, really start to make a bit of a name for himself as a stand-up in New York, this is about the same time that, like, The State was getting big on MTV, and like, you know, those guys cross paths a lot, and like, he's had nearly every member of The State on, and all of them have been like, yeah, you're a real dick.
Yeah, it sounds like that. Like, anytime somebody got famous, like, oh, how's it feel to suck Satan's cock?
Yeah, like Michael Ian Black was just like, yeah, you were just relentlessly horrible to me, especially when I started doing stand-up.
Well, the more you hear him talk about himself or watch his show, because even after the episode's done, he'll tell you about the parts that were like based on real life.
Right.
You realize that, like, no matter how much you thought he hated you, he hated himself so much more. The first episode, he has Dave Foley on as a guest. And there's some kid on Twitter who is constantly giving him shit. And so he gets him and Dave Foley. He's like, I want to go find this kid like that British boxer did and go give him what for. And so they hop in the car and they go, and the kid's there with his
play. So it's like the Big Lebowski.
Well, yeah, the kid's there with his D&D group, and he goes to confront him like, yeah, you talk all this shit on Twitter. And the kid's like, wow, this is really embarrassing. He said, yeah, isn't it? He's like, no, I mean, it's embarrassing for you that you would that what I said got to you this much and you would come down here.
Well, it's funny you describe it. Like, I know how much you, Martin, love the awkward humor, the uncomfortableness.
Sure.
When I look and see three of these episodes were directed by Bobcat Goldthwait, I'm like, well, there you go.
Well, one of the best episodes is with Danny Trejo. Because Mark Maron, he's a, you know, ex-drug addict, and goes to AA, and Danny Trejo plays a guy who's at an AA meeting, and he becomes his sponsor. And they go on this trip through East L.A. that goes in places that you don't see coming, but it's one of the best episodes.
And Mark Maron is, you know, he is lily white as they come.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, lily white, liberal, you know, blowhard, neurotic.
Yeah.
It's just like, he is not the guy to voluntarily take a trip with Danny Trejo to a McDonald's, much less East L.A.
I can't believe Danny Trejo's almost 70.
Is he really?
Yeah. And he can still kick all of our asses. Like, even if we dogpile him, he'd just be like, fine.
He's been, like, heading up his own series of action movies now. Like, there was Badass, and now there's Badasses with him and Danny Glover doing it together.
Yes.
I was like, really? I guess that, you know what? 70's the new
It's a new 40.
40, I
well,
guess.
Well, hell, man. Yeah. All the major action stars of the 80s are pushing 70. Yeah,
that's true.
That's true. That's very true. Another thing that, I'm going to talk about something that's really been making me excited, and I know I've brought this up in other places, but...
I'm not talking about Xanadu anymore.
No, we're not talking about Xanadu. I've had enough talking about Xanadu. I won't bring it up again, I promise.
Hey, we just record you saying that.
Yeah.
Until I do my show, The Xanadudes, which is going to be awesome.
Yeah, good luck getting a second one.
It's cute that you say shows.
It's like, This week, we'll be reviewing a step-up movie again.
This week, I will be interviewing Olivia Newton-John's roller skates.
Olivia Newton-John's second replacement stunt double. Amazing. You mean you got to see her?
Your backside was stunning in that one shot.
Oh, you just saw the movie. All right. No, for me right now, like Hannibal, the television series, is one of my just absolute cracky pleasures.
Yeah.
And I really didn't expect this from when I heard about it at first to be any good at all.
Oh, I know. I know.
It sounds like a horrible idea, as really every movie that's come out since Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to say it, but Brett Ratner's Red Dragon is not bad.
No, it's not.
No. I like it better than Manhunter.
And in fact, book-wise, Red Dragon is a superior book to Silence of the Lambs. Silence of the Lambs is the superior movie.
Yeah. No, that's very true. And Hannibal, this TV series, takes place before Red Dragon. So we're seeing the beginnings of really that character, Will Graham, who is the one who we know eventually catches Hannibal Lecter, but him first sort of being like absorbed into the FBI as a profiler, as the guy who's like this genius profiler who's much more mentally disturbed than he was in Red Dragon.
Yes. Well, I mean, what makes him good?
If you read the book, they make that very clear that, because, people are actually straight up telling him, like, the reason that you're a good, serial killer profile is you're pretty much a serial killer.
You are. In many ways, he's kind of a Dexter, but like not at all the same type of personality.
Not as bloody or choppy or flayed.
No, he doesn't actually kill anybody. He goes into these crime sequences and he so sees everything that happens. I mean, he's practically psychic, really, but he's so able to be aware of everything that happens and all the motivations that put himself in their brain that he has trouble letting these pieces go, and he starts hallucinating later on, well after the fact, the pieces are crossing over, this guy, all these things, all these killings he's witnessed to are destroying him as a person. And not making any better is the fact that he, and in this case, I'm trying to remember who plays, with Lawrence Fishburne, who plays Special Agent in Charge Jack Crawford.
Oh, nice. Wow, he's getting all the race switches lately.
I know, right? They're both good friends with Hannibal Lecter, who is just a well-respected doctor, here played in a very different way by Mads Mikkelsen. Nothing like Anthony Hopkins.
Nothing like Anthony Hopkins at all.
Which is the way to do it.
It's the way to do it, It's just like, no, don't try to ape fucking Anthony Hopkins.
Well, and also, like, he's so understated that, you look back and you're like, Anthony Hopkins is really chewing a lot of scenery.
Know, it's funny watching this. I'm like, wow.
Well, if you watch
Anthony Hopkins is like a Southern dandy.
If you watch Manhunter, Michael Mann's Manhunter with Brian Cox playing Hannibal Lecter, he's much more personable and he's much more downplayed in that. You get more of that.
I mean, Hopkins Silence of the Lambs' choice of the way to play it was perfect for that
movie.
Sure,
absolutely.
And unfortunately, in the follow-ups, it was just silly.
It became a cartoon character.
Freddy Krueger'd it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was going to say that.
But here, the fact that he really is much more of a convincingly real person, but yet still, I mean, he's obviously just a mega genius. He's the most manipulative Machiavellian guy who's ever lived.
And he is by far the best dressed man on TV.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I watch this, what this dude wears.
You're taking notes of his shirts.
Well, it's one of these things, when I first start watching it, like, to me, Mads Mikkelsen is such a weird, eely looking dude with those no eyebrows or lashes and those lips and all. And I'm just like, can't anybody tell that he's a serial killer just from his face? Come on.
But
the longer it goes on, the more I start to really get like, he actually is a charming motherfucker.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like, he is really good at stroking people's egos.
Yes.
He's really good at telling them what, not just what they want to hear, but what they actually need to hear, what they believe in him. He can read people. He does understand people. He's really smart. He just also likes to kill people and eat them.
And it's feed almost them like to... he's got a way of, I don't know, really getting them into his head.
And lungs and liver and stomach.
But mostly the stomach.
Now, yeah. I wasn't so much into the, like, the movie, the show really loves to just let the camera just fall in love with how he prepares human flesh and cooks it and serves it to people and watch them eat it and probably giggle to himself as they do it. And I wasn't so with that at first. I was like, it's a little exploitive and, you know... But the longer it went on, the more I kind of got numb to it.
I see what you're doing there.
Yeah, I see what you're doing. Yeah. And there was a time when he was at the opera and this woman goes like, oh, Hannibal, I wish you'd cook again. I really miss your food. He's like, you know, I'm thinking about getting back into that.
Well, that's the thing is like his whole deal has always been like, I don't kill just anybody.
Right.
You know, I'm rather selective about who I kill to choose to eat. These people who are rude, they're waste of spaces, they're unpleasant. And at the same time, he tends to feed people he respects.
Yes.
Like, because to him, it really is a thing. Like, there's a reason. He's not eating it out of cruelty. He's eating it because, like, this is the best food. And he feeds all these, like, society people he really genuinely likes and everything, including Will Graham.
Oh, yeah. And, all like, the time.
Every episode is Lawrence Fishburne sitting down to dinner with him, and I'm going, oh, no, it's lamb or rattlesnake or something. He's like, this is more so good.
Oh, come on. It's just like, you know, that thing you read that everybody, you know, eats several pounds of bugs in their lifetime, a little bit of radish. We've all had a little human flesh here and there, whether you know it or not.
Well, either way, it's terrific. They make a lot out of the like not just Mads Mikkelsen as Hannibal Lecter, but Hugh Dancy, who plays Will Graham.
I love Hugh Dancy.
Is one of the best actors on TV right now.
Actually, finding out that Hugh Dancy was in this show was what made me decide to go ahead and watch it.
He's spectacular in this part. I mean, he's completely neurotic, to be sure, but it's because he's insane. But he doesn't want to be a killer, and he knows he's that close to being a killer. So it's like either catch killers or be a killer.
Okay, now, I do want to speak to one problem with the show.
Okay.
A lot of people get killed on this show.
Yeah.
And yeah, you want a show about Hannibal Lecter, it's what you want to see.
It's brutal.
It's brutal. Oh yeah, some of it is just so disturbing.
I can't believe it's on NBC.
I mean, honestly, like the penultimate episode had something in it where I was like, God damn, if I hadn't been numb to all these others, I would have turned this off and had nightmares.
Yeah.
However, I kept to imagine that if there were that many murders in just that one little small Baltimore area.
Well, no, there's not. Actually, that's Christ. The thing. It's like I was thinking that at one point, and then I went back, and it's like, no, they're flying all over the country. That's the thing. Is they're constantly going everywhere. They're going like, oh, Alaska, oh, Colorado, oh, Florida.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
They're FBI.
However, there's been enough weirdness, let's say, around Hannibal Lecter to not have anyone suspect him and go like, dude, what's going on here?
This is a little strange. Well, to be fair, it seems like by the time you get to the end of just the first season, Will's starting to think something's up.
Yeah,
you haven't seen the last one. Well, that's the thing that kind of interests me is what's the sustainability of something like this?
True.
Yeah, that's the big question.
That is the question.
Because it's been renewed for a second season. It's been getting really good critical reviews. I don't know what the ratings are for sure, but apparently good enough that like halfway through the season, they renewed it for a second season.
It is when I'm watching it, I'm like, this is great. I'm just thinking it can only be one season. And then when I read it got renewed, I'm like, how are you going
to
do that?
Well, that's the thing is, like, I'm more than pleased to see that many more episodes. But sure. It makes you go, well, how long can you go on with this before you go, all right, guys, come on. Now, that being said, there's no reason. I mean, this is a reinvention. This is not a prequel to the movie Red Dragon or to the movie Manhunter. It's a start from the beginning. There's no reason they can't just continue it through the books.
Well, there's not that many books.
There aren't a lot of books. There's
saying, I mean, like, they can drag Red Dragon out to a whole season alone. You know?
Okay, maybe you're right. Because my fear would be that it would Dexter.
Come on, who would want to see a series based on a bunch of books that are already out? Nobody would watch something like that.
Yeah. No, I mean, being Dexter isn't a bad thing, though. I mean, Dexter did pretty well.
Sure, but there has to be that, you go like, okay, for real, how long can he get away with this?
No, the man works in a police department, come on.
It's like, as much as I love The Shield, I'm like, you know, Vic Mackey can do this for only so long before it's going to strain his credibility.
I really appreciate stuff like The Wire and, you know, that this, like, hey, you know, we're doing our five series and that's it. And you know, that's kind of the British method, which is like, you know, hey, we're going to tell a story and we're going to tell it well. And, you know, if we see the reason to move on and do another series, we'll do that.
And this is from Brian Fuller, who is a guy who every show he's ever done has been amazing and has lasted at maximum two seasons before it got canceled.
No, there you go.
And so if he gets to a third season, he's just going to be like,
I don't know what to do.
What do we do now?
I need this help.
I have no idea. I didn't plan for this. Well, Hannibal,
what do you mean you're not canceling it? I haven't written the thing in a year.
Hannibal takes a break from eating people to go run a bar in Boston.
He meets a bunch of quirky regulars.
It could happen. I'm just saying. You never know. All right, moving on. Like, I know Bo came into this with something that he was excited about this
week. Yeah, speaking of English series, and I just kind of wandered upon this because I was, you know, going through Netflix, and instead of watching any of the mini series that I have on my queue, I was like, oh, let's look at this. Chloe Sevigny is one of my favorite actresses. You know, I've had a mad crush on her for a long time, and I've really enjoyed the TV that she's been doing recently.
American Horror Story.
American Horror Story.
She's great on that.
Big Love, which she was doing before then. She's a recurring role on Portlandia, which is really fun. You know, because she's dating both Fred Armisen's and Carrie Brownstein's character.
Okay.
But speaking of alternative lifestyles. So there is she went over to Britain to do a series there, you know, straight up British series, and it's called Hit and Miss, and she plays a transsexual hitman who finds out she has a child with one of her former lovers back when she was, you know, still presenting as male, and her, you know, former girlfriend lover has left. Has died of cancer and has appointed her guardian to all four of her kids.
Four?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
And as they say, mayhem ensues.
Oh, wait, so she only had one kid?
She only had one kid, but
she gets
when
awful.
when she was originally dating them, had already had two kids. She got her pregnant and she had another one, and then she had one more. So, yeah.
Is there a point you go, look, I'll just take the one?
Yeah, right. I'm going to check this box.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, when she gets there, she's just like, you know, it's only six episodes, you know, you can literally sit down and watch this and, you know, an afternoon and an evening.
Yeah, you just if you're just dicking around.
Hi, it's funny because he has penis.
Yeah.
She has penis. So, the very first episode, she executes a guy. She goes to pick up her payment, and he's like, her boss is like, oh, I got this postcard. And she's like, oh, fuck, it's from my ex. And then she's like, apparently I have a son. Fuck. And she's just like, I want nothing to do with this. And then she goes out there, and she kind of remembers the relationship she used to have with the older kids. And, you know, everything kind of snowballs.
Wow. This is by the Paul Abbott, who was creator of or one of the writers on Cracker, which is amazing.
Oh, dude, love Cracker.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the creator of State of Play, which was a great miniseries as well. Not as good of an American remake, but still,
it's a really really well written thing, and you know, Savigny's great in it. Like I said, I'm a big fan, but man, I just gotta say, it's so nice to see an American go over to England and take the lead in one of their fucking series.
It's about time.
God damn.
Is she doing an English accent, though?
Yes, she is, and she does it very, very, very presentably.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, she is not an American. She is, you know, playing, you know, someone who grew up in the north of England.
We gotta start sending people over to Australia, too, is what I'm saying. That shit's getting real.
Yeah, an Australian Superman? What the hell?
I know,
at this point, it's like, all right, it's on.
Well, we need to find, you know, some crazy closet religious zealot and send them over there.
Maybe like the most American guy ever to play a remake of Crocodile Dundee.
Well, oh my God, like Damian Lewis. It's just like, you know, when I first saw him on Band of Brothers, and the first time I heard him speak in his real voice, I was like,
oh, yeah.
Hey, no fair!
You can't do that! That's like the most patriotic show ever!
I mean, because there's, like, you know, with people like, you know, Henry Cavill's another good example, there's never any moment where you're like, oh, well, you could see that he's trying to do an American accent. You know, it's not like Ewan McGregor, where you're right. Like, yeah, you can't do this. or Sean Connery.
Or the new Ewan McGregor, James McAvoy. It's like, exactly. Nice try, kid.
It's like, sorry, you're still in Glasgow there.
So this is not actually available, I guess, on Blu-ray and DVD yet, but you can...
No, but it is streaming on Netflix right now.
Streaming on Netflix right now. So
to the Netflix!
To the Netflix!
And miss, I like Chloe Savini, too. I think she's terrific. So, yeah. Yeah, I was going to make a brown bunny joke, but I'm going to let it be.
Hey.
Best not to. No one's seen that anyway.
I've seen it.
There's a blowjob scene in this, but it's not as graphic as brown bunny.
That was my joke about her always being around prosthetic penises.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Oh, that wasn't a prosthetic.
I'm pretty sure.
I've brown bunny? No.
I've heard it was.
No.
No? I'm pretty sure.
No, she's actually said, yes, I performed oral sex on
Vincent Gallo?
Yeah.
Wow.
On camera.
Yes.
For that long.
Why couldn't she have sex with...
You know, you might find this interesting, but people have performed oral sex on camera before.
Why couldn't she have done it to someone who isn't repulsive?
I know, right? Well, what's the fun in
the
that?
The woman dated Harmony Korine, okay?
Oh, Jesus.
She's had worse things in her mouth.
So she's...
Talk about a hit and a miss.
She's well-versed and repulsive.
Yeah, but seriously.
She can write a thesis.
All right. Now, the last thing I want to talk about before we move into the next segment is, hey, man, the Venture Brothers are back.
They are.
Boy, are they back. Now, the funny thing about this is, bringing back the Venture Brothers, the show that is on Comedy... It's Comedy Central?
No,
it's Cartoon Network. Adult Swim.
Is that when it started, it was always like, okay, this has a limited run space to it, and they're always like, we're ending it at 4. They said for like 2 years beforehand, 4 is the last season.
Well,
and
yeah, because they did the first season, and it's like, hey, is this coming back?
Actually,
I don't know, maybe.
Hopefully. I interviewed Doc Savage and Jackson Publick a little while ago, and they're like, I asked about that, and they're both like, I don't know where this idea came from, because it certainly did not come from us.
Oh, yeah?
Really?
We never actually said that.
I think I got that idea from the magazine that had a 4-page interview with them where they said that very clearly.
Yeah. To be fair, they probably smoke a lot of pot.
There you go. They're denying
plus,
it
Bo,
now.
Can you prove that that said that in the interview?
Yeah, I mean, hey, I certainly can, because I fucked up and didn't record it right.
I know.
Aww.
Not next time. That does disappoint me.
No, I'm saying all, because you totally throw him under the bus.
No, I know, it was horrible. No. It wasn't his fault, it was my fault. I should have been the one to step in and make it all work and happen, but I was trying to get him to interview
them. It's my fault, because I saw you fucking up and
I was trying to get them to interview. He had never done an interview before, and it was like, okay,
well,
I've
interviewed people, but I've never like recorded them through Skype.
Yeah.
I had this software, which is apparently supposed to do it, and it was like, you know, as soon as I like, you know, brought it up after the interview, it was like, nope. What are you gonna do?
And that was our hope, we'd have that for the first episode, but that was my fault that I didn't set it up. But you know what? It makes me happy that you got to talk to two of your
friends. They were absolutely great.
But the season 5, you know, all a little worried. It'd been a long break, you know.
Sure.
4 ended on such a, like, wow, what a
one of the greatest finale.
Yeah.
That's like, wow, like, greatest series finale.
This is
not the finale. Oh, well, damn.
Yeah. And right off the bat, season 5 is like, by the way, you think you already saw the best Venture Brothers episode? Watch this one.
Yeah, the premiere, like, just knocked it out of the park.
It was quite epic, because I was watching it, and it picks right up from where season 4 left off. And,
yeah, like, literally. Yeah. Like, you know, Dean gets brought home by Triana's father, who, you know, he ended the finale by telling him to go fuck himself.
Right. Yes, which was awesome. I was watching it, and the first half, I was like, well, okay, it's back. This is good stuff. But his second half, which jumps ahead in time, I thought was amazing.
Yeah, no. There was a little while going, what are you doing with this? But once it starts moving and it gets into the sort of like Planet of the Apes weird, I don't even know what it is, that sort of like a group of like psychic...
Oh, yeah.
Stuff who were like, form their own society inside of the venture compound. I was like, what the hell is this? It's awesome. And like Gary, one of the guys who was originally the one
he
of
is
the
agent, yeah, 20, he was yeah, agent 24. 24
is now like Sphinx Commander. He now works for
there's,
the Venture.
Well, course, there's nobody there. He doesn't work for the Ventures. He's the commander of Sphinx, right. But there are no other Sphinx employees.
Brock and Shipwreck just give it to him. Like, right, well, we're not.
Nah, you can have it. We're all gonna go join our side.
So much good stuff going on there. The second episode as well is right off the bat. Like, wow, y'all are just nailing this thing with Hank turning into the Bat thanks to mistaken caffeine coffee for grapes.
Oh, right,
he gets
right,
so
right.
Caffeinated, he actually becomes a superhero. Just great stuff. If you guys have not watched The Venture Brothers, why are you even listening to this show?
Why are you part of fandom?
Okay, yeah. Now that you have the list up there, yeah, 4 episodes have come on so far. Okay. The last one was Spanakopita.
All right, and I've not watched the second two yet. I've only watched the first two, and I thought they were brilliant. Nothing is missing here. You need the only problem with the show, if there's any problem, is that it's so continuity oriented that you're going to miss half the jokes
at this point. Yeah, but you know it. They're like, what, 11 episode seasons?
Something like that.
Well, this... Even that. So, like, you can literally... This is something...
Well, sometimes more. 15, 16.
Yeah, 15, 16. Like, I'm sure the first season is abbreviated. Like, you can knock these out pretty fast. A lot of the old episodes are up on Adult Swim's website.
And Netflix has the whole first season, so you can get started that way.
But... Yeah, go Netflix it, you know... What and it, you know, bear in mind, this kind of starts out just like, oh, we're going to make fun of, you know, Johnny Quest. And it develops into something so much more. So
it does.
Definitely, you know, do the cat, like, you know, 6 episode, you know, test with this. It's well worth it.
And I hope that when they release this new season, they're going to put out a very Venture Halloween with it, which was awesome. Yeah. Venture Brothers versus Zombies. Bring it.
they always, you know. They always tend to put the holiday special on whatever season disc they put out.
Yeah, so I
can't imagine that they wouldn't.
And it's one of those shows you will go back and rewatch.
Oh, yeah.
Multiple times.
And you will it will become something that you will quote among your friends. So definitely, you know, get a group together to watch it.
To the point,
and don't laugh too loud because you'll miss some of the jokes.
Yeah. And you're gonna want at least one or two other people to see this with you, just so that you can repeat the lines to each other and crack each other the fuck up.
Well, you know,
like
what?
once Chris and I had like I think a whole hour conversation. Of doing nothing but just going, ignore me!
It's true. We totally did. Now, I want to take a second here to say, like, we've got a special guest, and it's our own Jason Murphy.
Uh-oh, what's he up to
Well,
now?
He belongs to the universe now.
He belongs to the ages. And Jason Murphy has got a new regular segment he's going to have you on the show that seemed to have no other name that seemed appropriate, but Jason Murphy is furious. Because he is. So let's go to our special correspondent, Jason Murphy. Jason, what do you got for us?
Okay, there is something that has been addressed many times, but I don't think it's been addressed definitively. And I would like to do so now because I have a lot to say about the matter, and that is My Little Pony. Now, this is a cartoon about happy little ponies getting together and wacky adventures and friendship is magic and some shit like that. Fine. It is directed at young girls, young children, females. But over the last couple of years, in light of the success of the TV show, we've seen the rise of bronies. And these are males aged 13 to 35. A demographic I like to refer to as old enough to fucking know better, who have a brony pride. And these bronies, they're guys who like this cartoon. And they go to conventions and they dye their hair and they write fan fiction. And I'm not saying that you have to define your masculinity by beating your chest and drinking beer and calling women bitches. But in your case, it probably can't hurt. Now let's think about the days gone by, the days of real men like Lee Marvin and Warren Oates and Charlton Heston. What would they think of that? I've got a pretty damn good idea. To make things worse, there's a strong current of sexualization of these cartoon horsies. There are entire forums on the internet dedicated to stories of cartoon horse glittery fuckfests with rainbows shooting out of dicks and grown men with purple hair frolicking in sylvan glades with their equine life mates. You don't have better things to do with your dick than fantasize about putting it into a cartoon horse that acts like a little girl? I have a solution. I have one. Kill yourself. Just kill yourself. There are lots of ways to do it. Look it up on the internet. Get creative. Make some sort of Rube Goldberg device that castrates you before shooting your head off. Email me and ask for suggestions. I have a book I'm writing that can provide helpful advice. It's called How to Stop Embarrassing Your Father by Jason Murphy. Be a man.
Well, looks like Jason's still mad.
The more things change, the more they don't.
He's mostly made it out of frustration and rage.
and a small portion of scotch.
And yes, that's all and, held and, together with lavish amounts of scotch.
And yes, by small, we mean lots.
We mean bottles.
Thank you so much, Jason. You will see a lot more of him and some other of our familiar faces from people who remember us from the old show.
From the old days.
Not to be named.
or you'll hear from their familiar voices.
Indeed. But now is the segment of the show. Like, you know where when we did our old show, I used to always try and throw in music in the middle of it.
You were great. Segments. People love that.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, we get more comments about your musical choices than the actual content of the show.
I know sometimes that used to confuse me because I was like, yeah, I just kind of wasn't really thinking about it.
I was really drunk when I put that on.
A lot of the time, yeah, because we'd...
I forgot it was there.
We'd record on a Thursday when it had to be up on a Friday, and I would be like... You know, we'd be going till like 1 a.m. recording, and then I'd be like, oh, fuck, I gotta edit this. I'd be wasted sitting there like going, I don't know, this song's good, whatever.
Yeah, Gordon Lightfoot, I think I like that guy.
Starry, starry night. That's not Gordon Lightfoot.
That's Don McLean.
No, that's Don McLean. And a damn good song, regardless that is a damn good song. Its corniness. But yeah, I like.
But it's no Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I like Van Gogh. What are you gonna do? Stop killing my cat.
No, I'm not killing your cat.
He looks a little killed. No, he's all right. So the reason I bring that up is because we're always going to have a music segment on the show, and I don't want it to be just about me anymore. I want us all to get a chance.
But you pick all the best stuff.
I know, that's true. But so the weeks with it where I'm not picking it will suck.
What are kids listening to these days?
Yeah, what are you kids like?
I'm listening to a little Django Reinhardt and Artie Shaw.
Great. This is a terrible idea, I can see already.
Yeah, maybe some Phil Harris. Get that on there.
but every week we're going to switch around and have one of us pick the song and get a chance to talk about why it's a great song and then play you a little bit about it so you can go check it out for yourself. And the song this week I'm starting because fuck, I'm going to. It's at oneofus.net and it's my site, damn it.
All right, Debo.
Next week will be one of your. It's my bike. And the song I'm picking is Bag Boy, which is the new song by The Pixies, the classic band The Pixies, the first new track they put together, studio track, in almost a decade, like 9.5 years. And The Pixies are important, of course, because they were one of those bands that kind of personified the early days of indie rock. They were sort of that dividing...
They're arguably the first quote-unquote alternative band.
Yeah,
what was their big song?
Oh, God.
This Monkey's Gone to Heaven.
Any given song from Doolittle, pretty
much.
Yeah,
and what was the big song off of Surfer Rosa?
Did Surfer Rosa have a song that was considered like a crossover hit?
Or? No. That's definitely, Monkey Gone to Heaven or Valuria.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. There's... Mimine.
Okay, guys, I'm black, so could you say something that I recognize or I might recognize?
Well, I'll play some of this stuff. Gigantic is the song you were thinking
Gigantic,
of.
Yeah,
it was a huge song.
Yes, that's the song that Kim Deal, who recently left the band, does the lead vocals on.
Yeah, Tromp Le Monde was their last album, their last like straight studio
when
album.
When did that come out?
That came out in 1991.
See, and that's what they're saying, like, they haven't recorded in a decade. I'm like, man, it's been a couple of decades, hasn't it?
And that had a number of songs that ended up going to the radio, but the thing is, like...
Were they anything like the Cranberries?
No. In fact, they were this weird mix of influences that was almost impossible, even today, to pin down. I mean, you hear Surfer Rosa, and it's like flamenco sounds.
Here Comes Your Man, that was the big...
Here Comes Your Man was the big Doolittle hit.
Off
Doolittle. But it was like all these different, just tons of influences crammed together with such a unique vocal combination from Black Francis, or Frank Black, I guess as he is now.
Yeah.
Who had such an odd speaking style, and Kim Deal, who was so musical, did a lot of the backgrounds, but occasionally took the lead.
Now,
Kim,
and she went on to be in the band The Breeders.
The Breeders.
Another really great band for the 90s.
Amongst other bands.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm looking at this track list, and I'm amazed by how short all these songs are.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is they did still come from a heavy influence of punk.
Yeah.
You know, so there was that was there, but nothing on it sounded like a punk song.
I mean, they're definitely like, you know, Kurt Cobain cited them a lot as one of his big influences.
Okay.
You know, and, like, there was a while there that, like, you know, like, out of that old, you know, late 80s, you know, early 80s to late 80s alternative scene, whatever you want to call it, with the big breakout band was R.E.M., but, like, you know, right kind of smoking on their heels was the Pixies, and they didn't cross over as much as into radio play as R.E.M. by any stretch of the imagination, but they're really influential. It's one of those things that, you know, it's like, oh, you've got a piercing and a tattoo. I bet you've got a Pixies album somewhere in your house.
Yeah, there are a few bands I would say that are as influential as the Pixies are. I mean, as big as the fact that Nirvana clearly made a lot more money, ultimately the Pixies had more influence on more bands,
oh, yeah.
I would say.
Well, I remember, like, you know, before Nirvana hit, the two big flagship bands of you know, the early 90s alternative stuff, it was Jane's Addiction and Pixies.
Yeah, and I would say maybe Camper Van Beethoven.
Camper Van Beethoven, yeah, extent. You know, those kind of, you know, proto-grunge bands.
Yeah, I mean, like, they were like intellectual grunge,
yeah,
if you will. you know, quirky, bringing a lot of art rock, clearly
like Yola Tango, that's another.
These are guys who listen to Velvet Underground as much as they listen to Iggy and the Stooges.
Right.
You know. But anyway, they have been together forever. Part of the reason because Kim Deal and Black Francis can't fucking stand each other.
That's what I get.
They apparently hate each other. And she, a couple months ago, said, well, fuck you. I don't want to. If y'all are getting back together, I don't want to have any part of it. She had been participating in tours they've been doing. They've been doing reunion tours. But apparently it's like, I don't want to put out new albums. I don't want to work
in the studio with you.
Yeah, I don't want to work in the studio with you. And apparently, I don't know. I can't speak to who's the person who's difficult. Maybe they're both difficult. But either way.
That sounds like, I mean, I remember I saw them play the Texas Union Ballroom during the Doolittle tour, and you know,
oh, me too.
So yet another time we were in the room together and had no earthly idea who the other was. But yeah, Frank Black was being very persnickety with the sound that night, and just, like, you know, making faces and horrible gestures at the sound guy.
But I've also seen thing with Kim Deal where she also seemed like she was kind of a pain in the ass.
Well, and you know, she did have that really bad heroin habit for a long time.
It was only because of her sister Kelly. Bringing it
that's
over.
True. Hey, sis, let's do some horse together.
Yeah, Kelly, wasn't she in Belly?
She was in the Breeders.
No, but I thought she was in Belly well at some point. Mm-mm. Was she not?
Belly was.
Oh, no, but the Amps was Kelly's band.
I believe so.
Okay, all right. So anyway, not to go too far into like the tertiary band stuff.
Yeah, too late.
The history of the 90s.
The point is that it's been a long time since they've been together. Certainly Black Francis Frank Black has put out a lot of solo albums that never really had that feel. Like, even where he's still got that sing-songy thing, they never really felt like it. And I think a large reason for that is because guitarist Joey Santiago has such an incredibly distinctive style.
Yeah.
Isn't that just, like, way too typical that the band always makes better music than the solo guys do?
Usually.
Generally.
But you're always worried when they get back together after a long time that it just sounds like the solo projects.
Right.
But I'm pleased to report this new single, Bad Boy, that is the entire original band except for Kim Deal, where now she's been replaced by bassist Jeremy Dubbs, who was a guy who had been playing with Frank Black for a while, who's even singing her sort of background type stuff and sounds like her somehow. He sounds just like her. I don't know how. It sounds like classic Pixies.
Nice.
A lot like classic Pixies. Now, didn't you hear this?
No, I have not.
Oh, I thought you said earlier you did. I would have played it for you. I thought you said you had heard it.
Well, now we know.
You'd heard of it.
Yes. I saw, like, literally they kind of started buzzing about this today, and I saw, like, a little article about it.
Well, it's available for free streaming online. If you go to the Pixies website,
you can
check it out and download it. But we're going to play a little bit of it here so you get the chance to check it out for yourself. I absolutely think I think this is great. And if you look online, YouTube, there's even a video for it already. I hope that if they're following up for an album, it's as good as this song is. Oddly, you mentioned how short the songs are.
Yeah.
This is long for a Pixies song, which I thought was odd.
Oh, is it 3.5 minutes?
I know, right? I think it's even a little longer than that. But check it out right now, and here it is.
Thank you.
All right, I know, it's me. I'm nerdy and like the Pixies and grew up as a little indie rocker with my hair shaved on one side and turned over to the other like the Flock of Seagulls guy in Pulp Fiction. But
isn't it funny that nobody has bothered to ever learn that guy's name?
He's Flock of Seagulls.
Right, he's Flock of Seagulls.
He's Flock of Seagulls.
But next week we'll have another music segment with one of the other guys picking the song, in which I am wildly curious to know what that's going to
be. No, you're wildly excited about making fun of us for picking some song you think is lame.
Well, it's so sad because, like, you know, I used to be very much like Chris in, as far as my music geekdom goes, and I've just, like, lately, like, in the past, like, 5 years, I just, you know, I'm like, whatever. And, you know, every now, thankfully, Austin's actually got a pretty decent radio station now that plays, like, you know, fey indie music and things of the like. So, you know, I'm not completely in the dark. But all I have in my car is a radio. Every now and then, I'll use the CD player. Remember those? you know, there's no way for me to plug in an iPod or anything like that.
Yeah, me
so
either.
Obviously, the fey, you know, indie stuff isn't going to always be my cup of tea. And so I just listen to everything. And it's just like, I know an embarrassing a bit about, like, contemporary pop music that's just wretched, but it's all earworms.
Yeah, so. That's my thing. Like, what I know about music is all my old man music and
then what your kids
and the shit my kids listen to. And it really is shit. And they even recognize it sometimes.
What's that like? Yeah, the number one song right now is Blurred Lines by Robin Thicke, who's Alan Thicke's.
Oh, I know.
And
but he's married to my girlfriend.
What's that?
He's married to Paula Patton.
Oh, I had no idea. Mm. Yeah, apparently, you know, which is funny because his, you know, the song is so, you know, I'm such a stud. And, you know, apparently he's been happily married for a year. But it's also, it's a great song because it's like, it's more or less, you know, a total ripoff of Got to Give It Up by Marvin Gaye. Which is one of the best dance songs ever written.
Right. So
it's, you know, just completely, like, you know, it's got this really great groove that you go immediately into and you're like, ooh, I kind of like this. And then the video is like, you know, a bunch of topless models, you know, cavorting around. So you're like, hey, this is kind of cool.
It's a good way to sell a song.
But it
worked gangbusters for Robert Palmer.
The lyrics are so, it's so rapey. You're just like, oh God, I don't want to like this. I really don't want to like this. I'm a feminist. I'm always defending women's rights. And I was, there's just, you know, Robin Thicke going, yeah, I know you want it. I know you want it. I know you want it. And you're like, just, well, couldn't you come up with a better line? Fuck. But then I think, well, then Marvin Gaye, it's like, got to give it up. I think I'm going to get a flyer on this just because all music is sexist.
Just don't resistible.
You gonna fuck me, girl? Oh shit.
Also in the news.
No, because let's face it, like the nice guy thing of coming in the long way, the boombox on your shoulder. I mean, it even worked for John Cusack, the boombox on the shoulder.
Plus, when your arms just wear out.
Is the point's like, once I put my dick in her, she's going to be in love with me.
Oh, my God.
That's not true, for the record.
Peter Gabriel never said that.
But there's been a long history of people sledgehammering that message.
Indeed.
Is that what this show is going to be?
No.
Okay.
No, we're too old and mature for that.
I'm gonna be like, well, I'm just going to have to pull a golden oldie out of the closet if I have to.
But you know what? Martin, you got this next segment.
Oh, yes. Well, we're talking about the news. And there's not a whole lot going on, I don't suppose. I mean, unless you look at the real news.
Yeah.
There's tons of shit going on.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
But since you guys tune into this show, you want to know what's going on in the world of comic books and movies.
Pop culture.
And a thing that caught my eye.
Now you can get married to a person of the same sex in California and go buy comic books.
That's right.
Congratulations.
And yes, marrying the person of the same sex is less gay than buying the comic books. But... The news item that caught my eye was the dismissal of Shailene Woodley from the sequel to Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Which, it's one thing to go like, okay, they fired her, or they decided to not have Mary Jane in the movie. But they decided to have her in.
They filmed
her scenes, and then later said like, well, we aren't going to do that. We decided to cut the scenes out because they decided that like, yeah, it might undercut the death of Gwen Stacy if Peter Parker has a girlfriend before the movie's done.
And it's like, spoiler, but still, like, they actually, there's lots of promo photos that they officially released with Emma Stone wearing the exact same outfit, which was a weird looking outfit.
Oh, that is such
that
a
Gwen
faux pas.
Stacy was wearing when she was killed by the Green
purple,
Goblin. Oh, right.
The purple skirt and the green jacket.
The exact same outfit. And you're like going, okay.
Guys, they did that because they only had four colors they could use in fucking comic books. They didn't even have non-gray black people until 1970.
Even the style of it was like wildly out of style for today. You're like, okay, you're killing her, Clint.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That's true. Like, yeah, there's a lot of styles that have come back in time. Yeah, it's come back in fashion, but that's not one of them. Yeah, I mean, that's already had its day. But the idea that like it decided like, oh, maybe we should cut Mary Jane out of this movie because that might undercut the death of Gwen Stacy.
Well,
it's like
you morons,
you didn't know that
they're
going to
go
script?
Through like you know we want her wearing the same outfit. But she's obviously not getting killed by the Green... Oh, well, I guess Norman Osborn is in this.
Yeah, no, they're introducing Chris Cooper as Norman Osborn. Okay. In fact, like, they're big...
Great
like,
casting.
They're big, like, we're covering it up. Nobody... No. Maybe, you know, we're not saying he's in it. We're not saying he's not. Look, he's in it.
Yeah.
Okay?
Gwen Stacy's dying.
Like, there's no question to me that this
so
film is going to end largely with the Green Goblin killing Gwen.
So they've got Electro and...
The Rhino.
And the Rhino. And if it was just some schmo playing either one of these guys, I'd be like, oh, well, they're just going to do a bit with him in the beginning and he's going to go to jail. But it's Paul Giamatti and fucking, you know, Jamie Foxx.
Right.
So two big bank stars.
I mean, a lot of the rumor that's going on here is that we haven't even seen all of the villains here. And that's because it's a build up to the Sinister Six, which would mean the lead up to introducing Norman Osborn is the Green Goblin, is the leader of the Sinister Six. The
right.
whole, like,
Which
this
is wrong.
My whole, like, building this super team of villains to take him out, and then, the reveal, he kills Gwen Stacy, yada yada. If you're gonna introduce Mary Jane at that point, it's like, I mean, alright, it actually might make sense in the Amazing Spider-Man films, because Andrew Garfield's portrayal of him is, like, the most shallow little douchebag ever.
Well, but I guess that is the trend. It's like, hey, man, we know the superheroes you grew up with, but now they're our superheroes, and they're darker, and a lot more selfish than the ones you had.
It's like, yeah, but
like between him and the new Superman, it's like, you guys really don't kind of give a fuck about the rest of us, do you?
Yeah, you're right. But Spider-Man especially, where his entire reason for being is about not being selfish and self-obsessed. Yes. You're like, oh my God, you can't do that. Dude, people are like, oh, you just don't like change. Oh, you're too stuck on what he used to be. It's Spider-Man. It's the very definition of the character. You can't turn him into a little hot rod, indie rocking, fucking skateboarding.
Well, and that's like, the thing. I mean, things always come to fore. Remember when, like, you know, the whole we have to have a kinder, gentler James Bond came up?
Yes.
Like, no. James Bond is a psychotic womanizer.
How'd that work out for you? James Bond has quit smoking and drinking.
It's like, no one fucking wants that because it's completely antithetical to the character.
No. In the next iteration, he'll be a vegetarian as well. I'm sorry, a vegan.
A vegan. I'm
going to stop Spectre from clubbing those baby seals.
The fact that anyone had to explain to them at some point, like it had to occur to them, maybe we shouldn't have Peter immediately meet Mary Jane right after Gwen Stacy gets killed speaks volumes.
It does speak volumes.
The way this series
is
being put together.
And yeah, it's just like, you know, that was one of the great things in the comic book is, you know, they Mary Jane's presence was very organic, which is, you know, literally she's the dog, you know, she's the niece of one of Aunt May's friends.
Of her best friend.
Continually trying to set Peter up with, and he's like, no. I won't be doing that. And hey, I'm in college now, and ooh, I just met this hot blonde, and I think maybe something's happening there. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, he's like, well, shit, I got roped into this, and I can't avoid the blind date. And he walks in, and you're like, whoa! Holy shit!
Face it, Tiger, you just hit the jackpot. Even she knows it.
Yeah.
She's like,
hamina, 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 hamina.
She's like, I just like nerds. I can't explain it. It's the only thing that gets me off. So I know I look like a supermodel.
Well, and the whole, you know, like, you know, Peter Parker was a nerd in high school. You know, he was you know, when he started hitting college, you know, the only thing that was holding him back is the fact that, he, you know, every time he's like, sure, I'll come to your party. Oh, shit, I've got to go fight the lizard. Sorry.
Yeah, I know, right?
That put a dent in his social life for quite a while.
If he had decided to, like, if he got that spider bite and just became a badass, he would, like, and then said, well, I'm not going to fight crime. I'm just going to, like, go on the
football team. I'm just going to be cool.
Yeah, he would have turned into, like, Andrew Garfield.
Andrew Garfield, yeah.
But no, that's not the movie, though, that they're supposed to make. I don't know. Anyway, I think that about brings us to the end of this episode of The Original Gentleman.
Because we're going to try to end every episode on the most crotchiest note we can.
Hey, that's what makes us original. And gentlemen.
We got to make sure that they remember the part to write angry comments.
Yes.
Remember.
What, are you trying to make one of us into McCoy from Star Trek 3? Seriously. All right. So we're getting out of here. Thank you so much for joining us. And
yeah, this is fun. I can't wait to come back.
And so you shall. Ding!